Welcome back.
It's been a while since we've chatted.
It has.
Well, we apologize for the lag. We've had a vacation and...
life.
It's been a lot. But anyway, so we're back to it. And this week we are going to be talking about the brand new 2021 version of Dune. Dune.
So, as always, spoilers ahead. And if you don't want spoilers, pause now. Go log into your HBO Max account, watch the movie, and come on back, and we'll discuss it together.
Welcome, dear friends, new and old, to our happy place, filled with coffee, books, and movies.
We're reviewing old favorites and sharing newly discovered treasures. There's something for everyone here.
This is Roasts, Reads, and Reels.
All right, we're back from our M&M break.
And it's been a while since we've chatted.
It has.
So we figured that the best way to come back to this would be to review a brand new Hot off the Presses movie.
Yes, and then we're going to go back and we'll record a few episodes about the movies we've watched while we've been away. And we have watched a few Best Picture winners from the vase.
We've tried a new... box of coffee.
Yeah, we've done a lot, but we need to go back and remember those things,
right.
and actually blog about them.
But so. Today we are going to talk about the brand new Dune. So this is a movie that I have been waiting years for. And when I say years, I do genuinely mean years. As you might remember, this movie was supposed to be out last fall, and it was delayed because of the pandemic, which is very understandable. Was then going to be released early this year, and then HBO announced that they were going to simultaneously release this movie and their whole slate of movies, both in theaters and digitally.
Yep.
Which caused some backlash among the producers, but...
Although I love it. I love watching movies at home.
Especially new releases.
Yeah. Not having people talking and eating popcorn and just being... obnoxious in a movie theater is like amazing, especially for someone that has some auditory issues where I hear everything.
You hate hearing people chew,
but I can hear every little thing, so it's great for me because now the only person I have to worry about is you.
And I'm sometimes the worst, but we're not going to talk about that.
At least I can pause the movie and yell at you.
That's true. One thing in particular right off the bat that I really liked about watching Dune at home was we have a pretty good setup for sound, and we have hue lights that sync to the movie.
Yeah.
And so we were able to have a full theater experience in our living room.
That's true. I suppose it's not as fun to watch movies at home if you don't have a nice TV and maybe a sound bar and a subwoofer and things, but
right.
We have those, so it is nice and... has given us the opportunity to watch things at home and still get a nice experience.
I really like also that we don't have to worry about paying, you know, $90 for snacks when we're watching a movie like this. Like
sure, we can eat our M&Ms at home.
And we made popcorn.
And popcorn.
But what was nice was, you know, we could pause the movie at a kind of a lag or a scene break, and we could make another cocktail, go to the bathroom. We had that ability.
Yeah.
And not lose what was happening within the story. So we could pause it at one of those breaks where, you know, we wouldn't lose, like, dialogue or...
Right. You're not worried about leaving the theater.
Right.
So, let's get to the actual movie.
What'd you think?
I really liked the story. I liked the pacing. I do think that it could have been a little bit longer. Or some scenes should have been shortened to make room for more of the story. I know there's a part two coming, but I think that, yeah, it could have done for with more plot. Yeah, overall, I liked it. The costumes were great. The acting was incredible. The music was very...
Be honest.
It was awful.
Michael hated the
music.
Music
made parts of it unwatchable for me, just with how loud they were and how much they didn't fit the scene. I feel like Hans Zimmer didn't watch the movie before he composed any music for it. He just kind of was like, this is what you will play, and I don't care what's on the screen. You just play this.
I disagreed.
Well, we can't all be wrong.
But my thoughts, I thought it was spectacular. And like I said, I had waited years for this movie, and I had looked at Michael and a few of my coworkers at work, and I said, I've hyped this up so much in my head. What if I hate the movie? Like, what if I hate to reference Interstellar, but what if I Interstellared this movie where I was so hyped for it, I watched it, and I just didn't like it? And thankfully, that was not the case.
Except for the music.
Music was fine. Right off the bat, though, the scope and the scale of the film and the costume design blew me away. It is so beautiful to look at. The costume design is so different from other sci-fis, I feel like.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciate that they took a new approach, because Dune is such a historically revered sci-fi. I'm really happy they gave it a new look and a new feel that felt new and not dated.
Yeah.
But overall, I love the story, and I thought it was very brave of the director, Dennis, to put Dune Part 1 in front of a movie that has not had its sequel/part 2 confirmed. Yeah. I thought that was fantastic, brave, and kind of put Warner Brothers, who's the producer, in a very hot position of being like, well, crap, we better greenlight this, because... I mean,
he asked multiple times to just be able to film Part 2 while they were filming Part 1, and he never got the go-ahead, and so he just figured he had to force their hand.
A little bit.
There are movies, I don't remember what they are, but there are a few movies that were supposed to have sequels that never do, that are kind of like that, where they're like, oh, Part 1, and then...
The Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Yeah.
One thing I think, going to what Michael had said about Dennis, the director, wanting to film both parts at once, is that you could really see by watching Part 1 that he had such a love of the story and the source material. He's talked about in his interviews saying that it was his like 14-year-old dream to make this into a movie, and you can definitely see that his dedication was put fully into this movie.
There was a lot of thought behind actions, or behind costuming, behind the direction for actors. Even we watched a small thing about directing a scene, and just the thought behind the way that the camera would move through the scene, or how that would affect the way that they use the voice in the movie.
Well, and what I appreciate about that behind the scenes, and I was going to mention that as well, was he never wanted it to feel gimmicky.
Yeah.
He never wanted it to feel like it was CGI or that it was fake. He wanted you to feel like you were part of the story, that it was real, like that these things that happened in this movie could have actually happened. And he didn't want the camera movements to feel fake.
Well, and it takes place, so from the book, from what I understand, it takes place in the year like 30,000 AD. They say it's like 10,000 whatever.
In the subcaption or whatever.
Right, but if you look at our timeline, it would be the year like 30,000. So it's very, very far in the future. But, you know, House Atreides? Mm-hmm. You know, the super powerful house, and just the politics behind the beginning. Some people will say that that part is really slow, but it picks up very fast, and I don't see why people are saying it's slow.
I think it's character building and story building.
You have to build up a little bit in the beginning of the movie, right? And you're setting up for why this house is so important.
Well, and I think it's interesting. You know, we have these, like, Atreides, their last name, but his name is Paul, and his mom, mom's name is Jessica. Like,
everybody else has fun names, and then him and his mom are just Paul.
And Jessica.
Yeah.
One thing that you mentioned that it was in the so far in the future was interesting is that there's no computers in this world. I mean, this is a world that has high technology and, you know, warships and everything, but it's not a world that is seeped in technology. They don't have tablets in front of their faces or phones or anything like that. It's very much the world we see is the world we get.
That is something that's explained in the books, apparently, that computing devices that aren't for ships have been outlawed.
Interesting.
So because of a war that happened, it was an artificial intelligent war. They don't want any computing devices. Computing leads to artificial intelligence. So,
I mean, what a commentary from the author originally, you know, Frank Huber, who wrote this.
Well, it's a cop-out, but yeah. It's a sci-fi cop-out to not have it. Because when you're thinking about what does a computer in the future look like, a lot of times you get it wrong as an author or as a movie director or TV producer. So the easy way out is to say, oh, we don't allow that technology anymore.
But to your argument, this is a fictional world. Yeah. I mean, the world of Arrakis, where the main story takes place, is not a real place.
No, it's not.
I mean, we don't have giant sand snakes through deserts because that would be terrifying. Popping out of moons,
destroying worlds.
Right. One thing that was interesting going into the actual plot of the show or the film, is we have these space witches, essentially, which rumor has it they're going to be greenlighting a series on HBO of that.
Yeah, I can't remember what they're called.
It's a name.
Pause and look it up. Hold on. Okay, we've looked it up. They're the Bene Gesserit. They are space witches who can control people with the voice.
Well, and they're trying to control the Empire, essentially.
Yeah, we find out pretty early on that they are shadow people. They work in the dark.
They marry into these families.
They could be all powerful, but yeah, they marry off the daughters and the women in order to influence politics of the most powerful families.
Which I thought was super interesting, having never read the books, like having that development happen of how these essentially space witches are marrying into these really high-powered families and having offspring to control the future of the galaxy.
Well, and part of it is to fulfill the prophecy. Mm-hmm. So they have a prophecy about a messiah, the only male that's born, because they're all women that are born. It's only daughters that have this power. And then Paul is the first one to have the power.
Who's a male?
That's a male, mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, yeah. To most of the Bene Gesserit, means that he is the prophet. He's the messiah for their witchy witchness. So,
well, one, let's speak about them, is that Charlotte Rampling, who plays Reverend Mother, is an unbelievable force in this film. I mean, she has a very small cameo.
Yeah, but pretty short.
But her scene with Timothy Chalamet, who plays Paul, is so strong, and you're so invested in that scene. I wish it lasted longer.
Yeah. Now, there are a lot of big names in this movie.
Huge.
Somebody on TikTok put it well, that it feels like there's a bunch of cameos. Mm-hmm. But
if you that's how the it movie.
Is in the book. You can't get attached to people at all in this, because it's a story of loss and using loss as a way of regenerating yourself
a little bit.
What's the word that I'm looking for? Overcoming your past and becoming your true self for Paul. I mean, it's Paul's story. So,
which is funny that you mention that, because what I've read from people who've read the books is that it's just as much Jessica's story as that, like, mother-son, you know, Bene Gesserit and Messiah relationship. But it's interesting because you mentioned there's so many big names in this movie. I mean, you've got Timothy Chalamet, Rebecca Ferguson, Oscar Isaac.
Zendaya.
Stellan Skarsgård, who gives a very creepy turn in this. It had such hype between these big names that people were like, oh, this is going to be a series we can rally behind. And spoiler alert, most of them are dead by the end of this first movie.
Yeah. But I think that's almost a good thing. I know there's more than one book, and the first two movies are only supposed to be the first book. So yeah. Really, if if this movie does well and the sequel does well, it could be a whole big series, which I would love to see because we need more sci-fi in the world.
What I think is cool about having so many big names in this is that it doesn't matter the size of the role. It's the role you have, like what you do with it.
Right.
So you have so many big names, but they play small roles. Like, for instance, Oscar Isaac plays Timothée Chalamet's father, and he dies halfway through the film. But yet he does such a good job with that role that I would hope this would set a new precedent of, like, big names can play small roles. You don't have to be the star.
True. Just comes down to money at that point, though.
And I wish it wasn't that, but we're not going to talk about money. But I think that it's so great that you see, you know, Jason Momoa, his role, you're like, yes, he's in this movie. This is going to be great. And then he gets slaughtered. Unfortunately.
Spoiler alert.
Whatever.
We warned you already, so.
We did.
Story-wise, it's a lot to cover, so I don't think we're going to do, like, a synopsis at all. I think we've kind of covered all the big points. I think it's definitely worth a watch.
And if you haven't seen it yet, what we've told you really hasn't been spoiler-ish. I mean, yes, we've told you that most people die in this, but not in what way or when.
Yeah.
I think that if you haven't watched the film, just be prepared that it is a lot of exposition, but it's a beautiful story to watch. I mean, we see this young man who is part of this very affluent household, and he's having to find his own way in the world. I mean, everybody he loves is taken away, and there's a scene in the trailer, if you watch it, that is not in the film, where he says, "This is an extermination, they're killing my whole family." Yes, that's true, but we see him having to recover from losing, you know, confidant after confidant in his life.
Yeah.
It's a good moral of life, you know?
It is. Be prepared at some points. The music will be unbearably loud.
No, it won't.
You may have to adjust your volume on your TV.
It's worth it.
But yeah, overall, the movie is fantastic. I love it.
It's gorgeous to look at, and it's breathtaking on the scale. I told Michael multiple times during it, you cannot tell that it's CGI. I mean, you know it's not a real world. It's not a real planet, but it is beautiful to look at. The action, when there is action, is gripping, fantastic. But the nuances and the small moments really do shine.
Yeah, it's very beautifully done.
So if you can check it out, you can see it in movie theaters now, or you can watch it on HBO Max for the next 20 days. 28 days, I think it's still on there.
So go check it out right away. Box.
Yes, go see it. And then let us know what you think.
Yeah.
And once again, we're sorry we've been away for so long, but we are back and we are ready to give you all of our roasts, reads, and reels reviews. See you next time.
See you soon. We don't see anybody, though. So
we'll talk to you next time.
We'll talk to you soon.
And we can't wait. We'll talk. See you.